What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's me, Ben, brother Jay. Happy to be here on The Pop with you today.
It's really great for you to take some time out of your busy schedule to come and spend about an hour, you know, discussing world topics with me.
World topics, you know, world leaders, probably.
Abe Lincoln.
How
hard is it for us to get to Abe Lincoln?
It's becoming easier and easier with every single passing week because I cannot believe how much the trend continues to be true that the more stuff we try to make up about Abe Lincoln, the more we can't.
It's because no matter what, everything about Abe Lincoln is quietly true. Well, also, I've gotten really into collecting Abe Lincoln trading cards, aka $5 bills.
Got a massive collection of Abe Lincoln trading cards.
$5 bills.
$5 bills, yo.
You know what? It's great, though. They're like, it's like some of them are worth things, you know?
So roughly $5.
Right. Like I found one on eBay the other day. Yeah, it was like $4.99.
Yeah, oh, wow.
You know, but like shipping.
Yeah, but shipping. So yeah,
made it like $8. Like,
you got to play the long game on that one.
I know. I got to be very careful. Very careful. Anyway, is there something else that has lately become true about Abe Lincoln?
If you recall, in the last episode of The Pop, we were discussing the true life fact that Abe Lincoln was basically indestructible.
How
he overcame malaria twice.
Right.
Even being shot directly in the head didn't immediately kill him.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Impressive
for most. And we were like, man, someone should really write a comic book about Abe Lincoln. And it turns out...
that one exists.
Ben, not only does one exist, but his power set is that he's indestructible.
I knew it.
Now, to be fair, Abe Lincoln is not the main character of said comic, but I bet a lot of people have watched and not even realized that they have made an extremely popular animated version of the comic. It is the show Invincible on Amazon.
No way!
Indeed. Yes.
So this is like fairly mainstream.
Very mainstream. So, and the first season came out last year. The second season has got to be nearing coming out. I don't know if you follow Invincible on Twitter. I know you got off social media. Maybe we can talk about that in a bit.
We definitely should.
But the Invincible Twitter feed, very funny, very self-aware, very good. But anyway, within the context of the show, there is this group called the Guardians of the Globe. They are basically stand-in Justice League characters. Okay. Everyone is obviously inspired by certain characters in the Justice League. But their leader is a guy called the Immortal. And he's actually inspired by Vandal Savage over in the DC Comics universe. He's like a bad guy, but he's also immortal. Anyway... his whole thing is that obviously he's immortal and can't be killed. He is killed in the show briefly before people like reassemble him and he comes back to life. Spoilers, doesn't really matter. He's not like a huge character in the show or anything, but he's the leader of the Guardians of the Globe. And he's one of these characters who's like, he's been alive forever. So he's actually been like a world leader in several different capacities, including, it turns out, he actually just was Abe Lincoln.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. He was Abe Lincoln, the immortal, the indestructible.
So this is just like how Loki in the show, Loki is like D.B. Cooper.
Right, exactly. Something like that. It's just like, this guy has been around for thousands and thousands of years, and in his life on Earth, he has made lots of different, impacts on all of human history, including being Abe Lincoln.
This is one of those things where I feel like any character who has ever been like immortal in this capacity, because I think the Eternals did this as well, where like they have the character of Athena, who is just like Athena.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, yeah, like she was just the actual person that like the stories are based off of.
Right.
Like,
exactly. Like
that's them.
That's them.
It's like writers can't not do it. It's like, if you've been immortal, you have to have been able to have like infiltrated like things.
Right. Like if you're immortal, the number one thing you have on your side is time, obviously, right? Like, you don't even have to, you don't need any sort of like high risk banking situation going on, right? You need just the lowest risk, eventually I'll be rich system going on ever. And eventually, it will, like, you know, everything is all like the banking stuff that like accrues you money over time assumes you will die after a certain amount of time.
Sure.
Right. But you don't have to worry about that.
So this is almost like we talked several weeks ago about the idea of like, okay, like what would we do if we didn't have to like worry about like money at all anymore? And I think your answer to that question was like, make videos.
Man, yeah. I mean, and I keep thinking if I could just get some work done, I could finally get some work done.
Exactly.
You know
exactly.
What I mean?
So the question is like, if you today, all of a sudden, like a doctor came up to you and they were like, we found a rare gene inside of you. And
yeah.
It turns out you are in fact immortal.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you will continue to live forever.
Right.
How would it change your life? Well, I mean, obviously it would change your life in a whole bunch of different ways and a whole bunch of different circumstances over forever.
Yeah.
However, would you live differently?
Oh boy, that is a crazy, crazy question. The immediate, it's a mixed bag because it's the immediate realization that everyone you know is going to die and you will not. And then you'll have to meet new people. And it's like, does my body age in this situation or am I like roughly like how I am now?
It's hard to say. I mean, yeah. I'd like to think that maybe like in this particular case, let's just assume that basically like the reason that they've discovered you're immortal is because like you're... everything about your like biology has been like locked like 3 years ago or something. So whoever you were 3 years ago is who you will be for the rest of forever.
Right. I'm just like 31 forever.
Yeah. So here's roughly. My curiosity though, is that like, I feel like whenever you have like people who are immortal in stories, and probably the only reason there's a story about them is because they're interesting, but it's also like you always assume that they're like ambitious and will become world leaders of some kind.
Right.
But like, imagine if there was just somebody who was like quietly immortal and like they just literally exist on the planet somewhere and just do like, you know, like farm rice.
That's in exactly Southeast Asia. Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Like if you're immortal, there's no reason to start calling attention to that fact, you know, like you've got forever on your, like literal forever on your side. So I think my mindset would be, for the most part, continue living the way I am right now, the way I'm living right now, just sort of understand that like eventually right now, 2022 will be just like a blip in my memory. And it's like, it's all about just creating a snowball if you're immortal. And then you can just disappear off the grid. Because eventually like you can get to a point of wealth just based on solely nothing but time.
Sure.
That like most people don't have. And you can just get there. Eventually, without even having to be like crazy creative about it or anything.
Right.
You know, like you just, you know, you don't have to be crazy ambitious. You probably don't even want to. You just want to like exist after a while, I imagine.
Okay. So here,
because you're not even really humanity then, you know?
That's true. But so, okay. I have kind of a curiosity question because I feel like you could apply it to this. And it's like a piece of wisdom that I took from a book that I was reading a couple of weeks ago, called The Wisdom of Insecurity, which was recommended to me by our editor, Riley.
Okay.
And it was like the entire book, for what it's worth, is not very long. However, every single sentence of the book could be like taken out and posted as like an individual piece of wisdom. Like every single sentence of the book is like packed with 19 layers of meaning. And so I was just like, you know, I listen to things on like that double speed or whatever. And so I was like, I feel like I would need to read it like 13 times to like even begin to start to understand all of the things that this author was saying. So
do you have like a main takeaway?
There
from
was.
It?
Oh, okay. Yes. And yeah. the main takeaway was basically this idea that if you can't learn to live in the present, like that needs to become your biggest goal. Because if you're always living for the future, then it's this idea that like the future never comes. So like if you're living now so that you'll be happy 3 years from now, then it's like if 3 years from now you reach that point, but you're still living then for 3 years from then.
Right.
Then it's like you never catch up with it.
Yeah.
And so like one of the biggest, like I think struggles that people have sort of universally is this idea of like living inside of the present, like living for the now and not being so preoccupied with what will still come.
Right.
And I think the more that you can find a way to narrow in and enjoy the now, the overall happier you will be. Which like of all the books that I've read, almost all of them have referred to this concept of baseline happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's basically that like, there is an amount of happy that you probably are almost regardless of circumstances. Mm-hmm. And so like you might have a bad day or a good day. And so you might fluctuate down or up from whatever that baseline is, but you'll always sort of land back at about the baseline.
Right.
And so if you really want to like become happier, the goal needs to be, how do I raise the baseline? You know, right. And it's like, so you're not trying to make like, I don't know, maybe even rounding myself in circles now, but it's like, you don't want to try to make like any one day just specifically good, or maybe the process of making every one day good will slowly give you like the gradual like lift
perhaps
on your baseline happiness. So what I was going to say though, is that if you were immortal and you could think and live in this way, like you wouldn't need to worry about the future the same way that we as mortals do.
Right.
So you might have the unique ability to always live in the moment.
Always. You're right. Because, you're not like, you don't need to worry about the future, because the future, like, the reason people will be worried about the future is because eventually they're going to die, right? Like, you need to prepare to get ready to enjoy the rest of your life, because that's what all you will have is the rest of your life before eventually it's gone forever. So like you need to do right now to be prepared for the future, so that in the future you're ready, you know, to be retired or to have fun or to be secure or whatever. But yeah, if you're immortal, then no big deal, right? The future is always there. You're not going to die. So just take your time.
There you go.
Yeah. This is like a key conflict between men and elves in Lord of the Rings, where like elves just take forever to do everything. There's no rush. No rush.
We are in no hurry.
We are in literally no. We got all of time. We have all of time. Why would we go to war? That's one way we can die, and that would be dumb. You know,
no better way to live.
No better way to live.
So, So interestingly, so living in the moment, I had something, I'm going to call this my wick of the peak this week.
Oh,
which we'll do early. Mm. But so a couple days ago, I was having like a bit of a down day at home, and Alice was talking to me over dinner, and we were just trying to like work through the problem. And it was just kind of like one of these, like, you know, she's like, what can I do to like, you know, like cheer you up or whatever. And so finally she was just like, okay, go outside and like go sit under the pergola and close your eyes. And I was like, I have no clue what's going on. Like, I mean, in my mind, I'm sort of like, I like, maybe she's got like a surprise or like something fun that she can bring out or whatever.
It's just but like an hour later, you've sat quietly with your eyes closed. It's like, wasn't that nice?
Right. It's like, that's it. Went up and took a bath, you know, like read a book. Just leave me out there just sitting quietly with my eyes closed. But no, so after like I go outside, I'm sitting there and I'm just like pure confusion. I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. And so finally, like I hear like the back door open and she's like, are your eyes closed? And I was like, yep. And so you can sort of like hear like her feet, like, you know, like come down the stairs, like pitter patter towards me. Next thing I know, I just get wailed in the face with a giant handful of flour, poof, just like baking flour.
Right.
She's walked down right up next to me and just blasts me with it. And I'm like, what on earth just happened? So like I open my eyes, one of which is like half glued shut.
Right, yeah, because you can't, you're full of powder.
I know, well, yeah. So I'm like, what happened? She's holding out a bag full of flour. She's got a bag and she goes, go. Yeah. And so then we proceed to run about our yard throwing flour at one another.
Nice.
I know, which was hilarious and random, and I never could have predicted it in a million years. However, it was a very nice like live inside of like the moment.
Right.
Where it was kind of like, I'm not even like worried about the fact that like my neighbors could just be like standing on their porch right now like, what are they like,
what
doing?
What is happening?
It wasn't until later that I was like, oh, I should probably have thought about that. Like,
no,
you know,
no,
like,
you shouldn't
I know,
have.
I shouldn't
exactly.
have, exactly. But so I was like, even like reflecting on it though, I was like, it was just flour, which is immensely inexpensive. You know, it's like, it's such a cheap product. Mm-hmm. It was like such a memorable thing. We took some hilarious photos after the fact where we were just both like coated in white. And like, even just being outside, it's like, there's nothing dangerous or weird or off or anything about flour just being on the outside.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe this is something more people should be doing.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not. I don't know if there's like some type of like health or safety risk associated with it.
Well, I think the thing that you're doing is just living in the moment though.
Oh, like, yes. Not, yes. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so basically my wick of the peak is flower fights. However, my real wick of the peak is live inside of the moment.
Live inside the moment. This is something I constantly back up against when we're doing like the vlog, for example, like whether or not, like a lot of times I'll be doing something with the kids, playing with them in some way, and it'll occur to me that like, oh, this is very adorable and it's like very like, you know, viewable. Like, should I get my camera out and like try and film this sort of thing? Like last week, we had all, I had all the kids in the backyard, and there is this sled that you might, you know, go down a hill for in the snow that we have left in the backyard. Often we'll just sort of like prop it up on the stairs as a barrier so Nick and Nate don't start going up the stairs because they're not great on the stairs yet.
Okay.
Don't want them to fall or anything. However, it was just sort of sitting out in the yard and Luke was dragging it around. And so we have this like tiny little hill in our yard and I just put the sled at the top of the hill and I was like, all right, boys, get in the sled. And it's got like a little pull rope on it. So all three of them pile into the sled and I just go like, what, you know, and then I just pull them down the hill. And once you get some gravity going, it just slides, you know, on the grass pretty good anyway.
Sure.
And then you can just pull them down. And, you know, we get to the bottom and they all tumble out and they're all like laughing and having an absolute blast. And we do it like, you know, five or six more times. And like, I could tell like, I am just having fun playing with the kids. Like I have, you know, I've lost track of like how much time is passing or what we're doing. It's just like, yeah, we're there. We're you know, we're doing summer sledding in the backyard with the kids. And then like at some point I'm like, oh, you know what? I should vlog this. I'm like, but should I? Cause I'm like, I'm really just like having fun with the boys right now. But then like also, man, summer sledding, these three in a sled, like that's very good footage.
Right.
You know, and it's just like, I hate like that battle in my brain. So
have I talked about the idea of performing fun?
Right.
I don't know if I did or not. I know that I wrote it down in one of my show notes for the pop several weeks
ago. Okay, I'm not sure you have.
Okay, but so the idea behind performing fun, I found a blog post about this sort of in the wake of, I want to say it was Coachella. I don't know if that was a big musical festival that just happened. But the thing is that there is sort of, and I mean, everybody knows exactly what this is. You've all witnessed it somewhere before through social media or something of the sort. But it is the idea that you are seeing photos of people who are performing exactly that fun. Like they have gone to a cool location. They have worn a cool outfit. They have done something in particular, like under the very intentional purpose of like, I need to make it look like I am having so much fun.
Right.
And that's the thing is that it's almost like, but are you having fun?
Exactly.
And so that's, I agree with you completely because like, I almost feel like, while so much of all of the aspects of the vlog, like when we do it as well, it's like, you're seeing like authentic moments of our life, but there's also like there's probably no way to ever capture the moment you just described. It's like, because I almost feel like unless it just so happens to be the case that you are like filming something and then it happens to be rolling as this like ensues.
Yeah.
It's almost like you can never plan those like magic moments.
Oh yeah. It's like, it'd be the only real way is if someone was like secretly filming you and you didn't know. Cause like, even if it was just like, oh yeah, this is my, you know, this is my vlogger friend. He'll just be here with the camera capturing stuff. You know?
Yes. Yeah.
It's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Even that, it's like, you're aware of the camera. So even if you're actually having fun, it's like, you still know.
So
it's there.
This has been like my thing at the last couple of like family gatherings that I've done is I will bring my, my point and shoot camera, which has like a nice zoom lens on it.
Yeah.
And I will literally like sort of like walk through the party and like almost be like looking from like inside of like someone's living room into the outside where like two people are having a conversation and like take pictures.
Yeah.
And so what you're getting is these like awesome candids.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that like literally nobody even knows it's happening.
Right.
And so it's not like a posed photo, which just sort of like, it's like, I'm sort of like on the patrol for like a cute moment and then be like, ooh, I can probably grab that. But I do think you're exactly right. It's like anybody I'm taking a picture of doesn't know that I'm taking a picture of them.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, secret vlog.
Secret vlog.
It would seem really difficult to pull this off.
It would, especially because once people knew you were doing secret vlog, they'd always know you were doing secret vlog.
Oh, that's true too.
Right.
Yeah.
That'd
yeah.
be the tricky thing. Hard You'd to have to get extra good at it.
Gotta get extra good at it. So anyway, on the note of performing fun though, and sharing it to social media, one of the transitions I can make here is that I signed off social media.
Signed off entirely.
I signed off of Twitter 2 years ago at the beginning of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like, it is such a dark hole and I'm like working from home and I don't have the ability to like have positive interactions with anybody else. And I will like stew on something I just saw. And it's just like, it was one of those things where it's like, It's almost like it's like the like car wreck analogy. It's like you just can't really like look away.
Right.
It's like I think that's usually how I felt. It's like I know I'm not looking at something good, but I can't stop looking for some reason.
Right.
And so I feel like I was like, nope, that's just it. I gotta remove my ability to get to it.
It is, yeah, Twitter is like, it is so random because you're right. Sometimes I will see something and it'll be like, I will see a remark and it's like obviously, you know, inflammatory or something.
Right.
And I will like go look at the comments just hoping to see someone like, you know, dispute it in what I would consider, you know, the, from my opinion, the correct point of view.
Sure.
You know, and you'll scroll down two or three and you'll like find someone who like validates your point of view or whatever. And then I will see, like, I wonder what people are responding to this, like, this more nuanced take. Like, are people agreeing, like, yes, this, or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But then you'll see people respond, and they're not even arguing, they're not even like, no, actually, you're wrong, I agree with the initial person. They've got some brand new thread of complete nonsense. And then you're like, what does that have to do with anything? And then it's like, the way in which, like, it's like, people start arguing, it's like, I don't even know. It's like people are coming up with new ways to be mad about so many different things. I'm just like, why am I here? I don't even know what I'm doing here. What is this?
I know.
How could you have taken it in this direction? Like, it's just like you're so determined for the other person to be wrong that it's gone so off the rails so fast in ways I can never anticipate. And it happens all the time. I'm like, I can't.
I know.
I will go and I will look and I'll be like, why did this even show up on my feed? And if it is like, it is inevitably someone like, someone I'm following liked this post. And I'm like, remove all of those.
How do I make this not happen?
If I could turn this off, I feel like it'd be a lot better. I don't care what people I'm following liked. If they posted something, that's something different. Because then I can just easily unfollow them. But now it's just like, do I want to unfollow this person because they liked a thing? I don't know.
My suspicion is that the day will come where it will be regulated that social media platforms will not be able to implement practices specifically intended to keep you on platform.
It sounds like a lot of gray area.
It is a lot of gray area, yeah. For sure. But this is, there's actually been, I'm going to attempt to have a slight financial comparison here, but there has been like a great big crash lately in the cryptocurrency market. Where everything has sort of like nosedived. But like the coverage that I've seen about it is basically suggesting that like the people who have like investment portfolios or whatever, they have like so much money and there are like literally playbooks on how to like get an asset to dive like low in price so that you can then buy it at a lower price.
Right.
And there are regulatory bodies that prevent this from happening. It's the same as like insider trading even with the stock market. But because cryptocurrency currently isn't protected by those regulations.
You can use all the old tricks.
You can use all the old tricks.
Right.
So it's like there's
Wild
nothing
West out there.
There's nothing from stopping anybody from just going through. Mm-hmm. And then of course the only people who can pull these things off are people that have such like huge amounts of investment dollars at their disposal in order to execute it.
Man.
You know, so like an individual person is not likely able to do this. However, if you were to take that idea and apply it to social media, it's kind of like so many of the platforms, what they do or part of how they work is that they're aiming to get you to stay on.
Right.
And things that make you feel angry typically are very grabbing as well, because you'll see something, it'll give you that visceral response, and then you stay. And so it's almost, we've talked before about like the robot that is designed to like harvest copper.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like the more that it learns and learns and learns and learns and learns, the more that it will like slowly start ripping pipes out of everybody's house to harvest copper. And then it will, you know, pull it from this other essential resource or this place. And then like eventually like all of the copper has been removed to the point where it's like there's nothing left other than a huge pile of copper.
Right.
It's like it's become too efficient. It's become a problem.
Right.
And I think that's maybe a small amount of tinfoil hat theory of what we're seeing is that like, it's like the more you can see something that makes you angry, the more that it will get you to stay. the more that you stay, the more likely it is that you will ultimately post something that will make somebody else angry.
This is, yes, I get like so aware of this. Like if I like feel myself like this is gonna, I will like try and like I know the algorithm is like sitting there timing you on any post, and it's just like, no, don't let it. Because it's like, I actively don't want to see more stuff like that. So please, like, this, like, can you notice how rapidly I, like, can you take that into consideration? The speed at which I exited?
You know? Right. Yeah. It's like you're trying to, like, talk to the algorithm.
So are, were you, so on, so I have two thoughts here. So, certain platforms, so you have, like, a platform like TikTok, though, where, like, you, like, I guess you're not on anymore. Right. But, like, you famously said, like, you never, like, clicked the heart button on anything. Like, didn't give it any information to go off of. Correct. It obviously still adjusted to whatever you liked and still eventually started feeding you stuff because based on, like, watch times and things. But.
Correct.
When you log on to TikTok, it's not like it is, it does not, like, as soon as you log on, it'll start feeding you videos based on knowing nothing about you.
Right.
Like it's not like YouTube where you go on and you intentionally look at a thumbnail and click it. You scroll with the intent of not knowing what's coming next.
Correct. Right. So, and I would say, like, as an example, so I did not get on, I didn't download or ever even enter the app of TikTok again until the pandemic. So maybe I got off Twitter and got on TikTok. And so one thing I can say is that, like, Charli D'Amelio, I think, is like one of the most famous TikTokers of all time. I saw her for maybe the first like week that I had it.
Yeah.
Because she has videos that get millions and millions and millions of views, but I'm also not her target audience.
Right.
So it was like at first the generic like shotgun shell information that it shoots you is like, here's a bunch of super popular things, and then we're gonna like whittle down.
Yeah, it's gonna 20 questions you.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like Charli D'Amelio is super popular to millions and millions and millions of people, which means statistically you could be one of those people. It turns out you're not. Okay, we won't show that anymore.
Right. Yeah, that's crazy, because like I watch TikTok fairly regularly, and like I don't like, if I've seen one of her videos, I don't know.
Okay.
You know, like maybe I've never seen one. I don't know.
It is also possible, for what it's worth, I also don't know. And maybe this was more of like a flash in, you know, the pan type of thing. Like maybe she was really big in 2020 when everything was kind of going wild.
So what I think is interesting though about your idea here, that it would be like illegal to, like, if there was a law that stopped social media things from like implementing that kind of practice, it would basically, like, that would be like the end of TikTok, because that's all TikTok is, more or less.
It would make TikTok and all social media platforms, by definition, which is to say the more you use it, the more you like it.
Right.
Let me just finish that. Okay. Sorry, yeah. So, like, which is not to say that, like I can hate Twitter, and it used to also still be able to suck me down a rabbit hole, but, like, still, I was using my time on it.
Right.
Which is to suggest, even though I know I hate it, that my usage doesn't suggest that.
Right.
So, what I would say is that if this regulation ever came to be, it would make all social media worse. I would also counter with, that would probably make the world better.
Ah. Okay. So here's how I think, here's my immediate like idea for how, maybe I don't think you could ever stop it from being like, you can't implement anything that stops, that, you know, keeps people on the site or something. Cause like, things like TikTok just wouldn't work. Or like, you get to the end of a YouTube video, it shows you suggested videos. Like, it removes the homepage from YouTube. But like, I think what you could do is like mandate a mandatory subscription only feed on any given like social media platform.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
Like, you could still have the Discover page, which will just randomly generate whatever it wants to keep you on the page.
Sure.
But then I would love it if I could turn on Twitter like the subscription only feed, where it's like, there are literally no promoted tweets. There are no, this person liked this person's tweet. It is just literally only people I follow, and that's it.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, and maybe what I would argue too, if that was the case, is that that would need to be what shows up first.
Right. Yeah. That would have to be part of it. You're
like,
right.
Like you would have to toggle to the different thing.
Right.
And I think that like, if you were to look at, you know, like any addictive substance or something like that, like those are regulated in such a way that like there are limits on how much of that can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suppose that if I'm going to start to try to like make real big leaps in terms of like ideas or how regulation comes to exist, it would be that like removing this practice from these platforms would almost be like regulating the amount of addictive substance that was allowed to go into them.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because I think that is the very nature of what it is. It's, right. It's almost exactly what I just described. It's like, I could know that if I open the app Twitter, it will make me feel worse.
Right.
And yet it's like, for the longest time, that was not enough to get me to stop doing it.
Right.
You know?
Right. You're still like, boop, you just open it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And so, ultimately, yeah. So over the weekend, I had a couple of life updates, so I can maybe like kind of fill in a little bit what ultimately led me to my removal from social media, because it was sort of like a couple of stair-stepped decisions. But one of them is that I stopped 75 Hard
completely. You stopped it.
I stopped.
Wow, the update.
I know. It was a big update.
How far did you get?
64 days.
64 days.
Yes.
Okay.
And so basically what happened was I set out with a goal. And my big thing with this is that like I have exercised a lot over the past like 5 to 7 years of my life in varying capacities, whether mm-hmm. it was rock climbing or biking or running or weightlifting. All of those things I have like committed a lot of time and energy to.
Right.
And I think that what I was trying to do with 75 Hard was something that I had never really, really, really done before, which was like live the whole lifestyle in order to try to like accomplish a goal. And so for me, what I wanted to do was basically put on like an additional 10 pounds of like physical muscle
mm-hmm.
so that like I would go from 170 pounds to 180 pounds. Like that was the goal, with the hope being that like if I'm eating more good food and I'm exercising more often, then I'm giving my body more fuel to then grow those muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately what happened throughout the process was I just lost weight. it was one of these things where it's like, I know that that's like one of those very like, oh my gosh, like what a problem to have.
I assume you're not getting a lot of sympathy for that.
Not the most, but which is fine. Like I'm really, when it comes down to it, I'm not asking even for sympathy. It just isn't what my goal was.
Right. Yeah.
And, one of the things that I was discovering is that like, as like my, even like body fat percentage was getting so low, I think it was just depleting my mood.
Well, yeah, that I feel like makes a lot of sense.
Yes. And so it was like one of these things where it's like, I am like definitely like in the beginning of it, I was like, man, I'm like, I'm not drinking alcohol. I'm eating all these like really good foods every day. I'm like, you know, being like very focused on things. Like I have purpose, and like all that was really good. And I think it was like the line graph of it was almost like I started, it went up for like, you know, the first like 3-4 weeks. And then it was sort of like slowly on this like descent down.
Right. And eventually it passed back your original
state
of being. Yeah,
exactly. Eventually it passed back the original state of being, which was to say, like again, if you go back to that baseline happiness type of thing, it was almost like this is aiding my baseline happiness at the moment. Like I might be like moving the needle or the line, like an upward trajectory. Right.
The first 20 days, you're great. You're higher than the baseline every day.
Right.
Right. And then you're at 19 and then 18 and then 17. And then all of a sudden you're down to like -7,
yes.
-8. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so I was like, man, this is not how I wanted this to go. And the real problem for me was that like I was very torn. Like I had like built these walls or like laws inside of my brain about like as if I had like made this commitment and it would be like wrong for me to like step away from it. And it's like, I am the only one holding myself to this.
Right.
Nobody else is holding myself to this.
Right.
And that was like a very clear distinction that like I needed to make for myself to finally just take a step back. So this past weekend, like I said, it was Sunday night. I was just like, okay, I'm done. And I went, and my favorite beer is called Get Bent from Parkway Brewing Company here in Roanoke. And so I went and bought one, and I was like explaining this to like my vlog camera, which hasn't come up yet. But as I'm like explaining it to the camera, Allie like came running across the room and like hugged me.
No.
And I think she was just like, I think that she was really feeling like the effects of it, like
right.
like this mood depleting problem,
right?
And so I had one Get Bent,
yeah, IPA. Your one beer
took me 3 hours, and I probably fell asleep. It was like, I'm back,
woo!
I'm back,
yeah.
That being said, sure enough, I can't do one thing without doing another thing, because apparently that's the way that my brain works.
Mm-hmm. So what'd you do now? Oh, that's when you decided to quit social media.
That's when I decided to quit social media. Yeah. So I was like, okay, feels like, and here, let me see if this logic tracks. So I felt like I couldn't stop doing this, because I was almost afraid people externally would be like disappointed in me or possibly judge me for like not seeing it through, which, for one, I don't think it's true.
Mm-hmm.
But two, I think it also suggested that I was building these parameters very much based on external perception.
Yeah.
You know, it was sort of like I was doing these things, or I was maybe trying to hold true to it more based on how other people would feel about it than how I felt about it.
Right.
Which is to say, not good.
Right.
I didn't feel good about it. And so I think that that realization then, as you apply it to social media, it was almost like, maybe there's too much of that. And it makes sense given like what we do professionally, given the fact that you are listening to my voice on a podcast right now. Like,
right.
We put a lot of our life out there, you know, for other people to ultimately
yeah.
see.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I do a lot of that on the pop. I do a lot of that through like Super Carlin Brothers. There's a fair bit of it on the vlog. It's like, I think that it doesn't need to, like, I don't know if I want all of it everywhere all the time.
Right.
And so I think that was part of it too. It's like the two ideas kind of like shook hands and passed each other and whatever. So I was like, okay, I'm going to see what it's like. And it's been interesting because you very habitually have the process, and you may not even notice this because it hasn't like ever stopped you before. But, I open my phone all the time to like go to these apps, and I don't even notice how fast my hand can like navigate, you know, to like the folders that I have like my social media apps in and stuff. And so since turning it off, I keep doing that like 20 right. times a day. But even through the process of it, it's almost like that's been like this stark reminder of like, man, if not for them being deleted off my phone, I would have just opened it again.
Right.
And so every time that happens, it's like, oh yeah.
Yeah. I it is weird when your brain has to like undo like this sort of learned behavior in that way. Like, I've had that when like people have, you know, exited my life before,
uh-huh.
where like if I've had like a person who like I was did not like being around,
uh-huh.
or something, and then like, you know, through circumstance or whatever, they moved or whatever, and they were just gone.
Uh-huh.
And it was just like, ugh. And like, I, you know, like you'd be getting ready for work and all of a sudden, like, you know, I would feel my brain go through some like mental checklist of like, okay, make sure you don't say this, or make sure like you back up, or you know, be prepared for this. And then all of a sudden, like some extra person in my brain would be like, actually, you know what? That's not a problem anymore, because that person's gone. And it was like, oh yeah.
Like, oh.
Like, yeah. And then like, of course, it's like, it's so weird, because like, and then suddenly someone would be like, no, you shouldn't be happy about that. You should feel guilty that you felt bad, that you were happy about that. And you'd be like, you're right. That was a negative feeling. I shouldn't be happy that someone's gone. And you'd be like, no, it's okay. They were bothering you. And it's like, oh yeah, you're right. Okay.
You reminded me like, a lot of like the shoulder angels from
it's very shoulder angels.
It's like, yeah, wait. He's got a point.
Yeah. The man. Okay. So this is sort of like branching into a new topic. As like I was thinking about that, because sometimes this will come up. Like I sometimes the way I feel like my brain works, it'll be like it'll feel like it's behaving in a way very similar to like the way a computer processes things.
Okay.
Or something. Like sometimes I can feel my brain try and take like a shortcut to something, like it like using muscle memory or something. As if, like, let's say I am, you know, standing at the counter and I need a spoon. And I like will reach down and I will open the cabinet door underneath the drawer where the spoons are.
Uh-huh.
And like, I will look down and look at my hand and just be like, what? This isn't where the spoons are. And it's just like, and then it's like, I can like, it's like as if I can like replay the log in my brain or something. And it's like, oh, I see what happened. I'm standing so near the handle that like my brain was just like grab handle, open drawer. But like my, it's like,
oh, this is interesting.
Right. And it's just like, oh, and so like I did that, but I happened to, I was like too close to a second handle that I actually grabbed instead. And it was just like, oh, you tried to shortcut it.
So your brain will go on like autopilot and like literally do like, not the wrong thing, but do like a similar thing that isn't the thing you intended.
Right. It was like, instead of saying open kitchen, open spoon drawer, it was just like open handle near hand, you know?
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
I have to tell you that I don't know that I experienced the same thing.
Never.
So I am very curious to know if others do, because there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that like, that there are certain like roadmaps that different people's brains tend to follow in terms of like what their like logical processes are in terms of how quickly they can get from like one thing to another or like what information they think they can like bypass the checks and balances and stuff.
Going to my other example where it was like, oh, I don't have to see this person anymore. Like I could feel my brain do these. It was like it was going through its like morning like going through like a system check or something, like make sure you're on guard for this thing today. I was like, oh, actually we ran the backup on that one. Don't have to be worried about that. We can let this one go.
You can lower the amount of things like that are kind of like processing through the cache.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just like, and so this is the, I'm going to walk you through my whole process here, but like, so immediately this is just like my, it's like, oh, we're in a simulation sort of thing. Like my brain is thinking like computer brain. And then I was like, no, you know what? What if it's not simulation? What if it's that people design computers the way computers are because they're designing their own brain, like in a way,
weird.
Like the way computers works, the computers work the way computers work because that's how your brain works.
Right. Like, okay. So that's a good point because I think more than we would want to admit, like, cause you tend to think of computers as like ones and zeros. It's all very, like, it's very binary. It's a series of like this or that, you know? And it's like the more complex, they have gotten over the years, the way more advanced things that we are then able to do.
Yeah.
You know, with those, this or that, like we're so far from like the ones and zeros at this point that it's like, we can't even see the original ones anymore.
Right.
That being said though, it's still like the decisions of those pathways were still created by human brains.
Right.
Which is to say that at some point in time, someone had to make a decision about what came next.
Right. Like, how to design the computer.
Right. And so it's fascinating to me because I don't know that I've ever really considered like coding in this way. Like it always felt like you were following such a specific set of processes that like it couldn't deviate into like personalized, but that's not really true. Like it absolutely can be like each person could have their own unique coding style, almost like handwriting.
Sure. Yeah, very much.
So I wonder if then like people who are like very good now, I'm sure people who know are like, this is exactly what happens. But I wonder if that means that the people who are really, really good at coding, it has maybe not so much to do with the knowledge of how to type in code form to the computer, but more how to do it like very succinctly.
Mm.
You know, it's like, how can you, have you ever tried to like Google a question? You're like, I don't feel like I'm Googling it correctly. And then you get close enough that like Google's auto-filled question is like, that's what I meant.
This, I, you know what? Sometimes yes, but I also come across this, like the way that people interface with Google is like a little bit, is like different somehow. Like if you put 30 people in a room and like they were trying to figure out the same answer, it's not like they would, like you would of course type whatever you typed into Google to get the answer, but like they all might type in different things to try and get the same answer.
Uh-huh.
Because I've had situations where I'm like, I could not figure out how to get this answer, and you'll be like, no, it was this. And it'll be like, I don't know what you put into Google that I didn't put into Google, you know?
Right.
Like, or
you're
like,
not wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Or like sometimes Beth will have a question. She's like, I don't know, I couldn't figure it out. And I'll just like go to Google and be like, it was right here. I don't know what you typed in that was different. Or like, what like what strategy you use to search for things, but it's like, yeah, like I don't know. Sometimes the way your brain interacts with it, it gets exactly the answer you want, and other times it's just not there.
This is the type of thing where I would almost love to go into like a control room or something where you're like inside of the computer looking at like little windows of like of let's say 50 people around you, and they're all given the same problem to solve and they all go to Google to solve it, and it would be so fascinating to see how close whatever they type in is to each other.
Right.
So it's like, I don't know how to even begin to start to develop like an experiment that we could do or like ask the audience to participate in. Like,
no.
You know, like how would you discover the following?
Right.
You know, it's like, let me present you with a problem. What did you type in to get to the end of it?
Right. I don't know. I don't know how to do that either, but it would be fascinating to see.
It would be.
Yeah.
Okay. If we can think of something, we'll have to continue to think on this. Or if you have an idea for something, listener at home, then certainly let us know, because that's something we could circle back to.
Yeah,
we can do some science.
Do some problem solving.
Yeah,
as it were. Which segues.
Heyo.
Nice into some other problem solving I've had to do, Ben.
Oh goodness gracious,
Ben. As you may recall, yeah. I have been recently trying to grow some sunflowers.
Oh, I actually am very aware of this. Yes.
And let me tell you, Ben, when I set out on this journey, I don't think I realized that like the war I was entering.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I mean, sunflowers by like the very definition of the fact that sun is included, the yellow appearance of them, almost everything about them seems happy.
They're very happy. That's exactly why I wanted them. I was like, you know what's great about sunflowers? Everything.
Everything.
Everything. They're really tall, which is fun. They grow fast. It'll be cool for the kids. They're bright and yellow. They're nice. You can see them all the way from the road. You know, like it's going to look good in front of my house. It's going to be good. And it's going to give me a reason to care about this tiny patch of earth right in front of my house that I have to walk past every day. That was previously nothing but weeds.
Weeds.
Which I hate. Yeah. Don't like the weeds. So anyway, yeah, it has just been like, I can't believe the amount of time I've had to dedicate to growing the sunflowers, because like you let me borrow your rototiller a few weeks ago, which was nice.
You're welcome.
Probably over a month at this point, and I just tilled it all up. And like in my mind, that was going to be the end of the weed problem,
More
or less, right? Like any weeds that were down there, I annihilated them. I ripped up the roots. They're all gone. Right? Wrong. Very wrong.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
I mean, certainly when I was left, any weeds that were on the surface were completely gone. It looked like just a brown patch of earth. And then I planted the seeds and then just, you know, wait for it to go. But sure enough, there's still plenty down there that began cropping up again.
Okay.
And like, I have gone out there. This is my third weekend in a row where I was just like, I'm just going to weed it. I'm just going to get them all. And like, it's amazing to me how much come back each time, because I feel like I'm pulling out buckets and buckets and buckets of them, and they just continuously come back. I'm like, am I doing it wrong? I don't know. And you'd think weeds would be my only problem, but its enemies are converging on all fronts.
Oh,
it
would seem. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Okay. So the other enemies are, I'm going to call them Luke and Nick and Nate. Just out of the.
I'm just going to throw some random names.
No, not really. These are the least of my problems. However, it must be said that sometimes when they're out there, they are the sunflowers are still growing nicely. You can see them. They're big like stalks. They don't have flowers on them yet. They're just big green stalks right now.
Okay.
And so they stand out. And so sometimes Nick and Nate will go over there and they'll just think like, ooh, what's this thing? And they'll just stomp on it. Just straight up.
So what do they do?
Stomp.
Wham.
Just wham. That's exactly what you'd think 2-year-olds would do. There's the big old stomp. Now, Luke understands, for the most part, what the sunflowers are. He helped me plant them. You know, he knows what they look like. He would never go out there and intentionally try and harm the sunflowers. But he's also been out there while I was weeding before. And, you know, he likes to help as much as he can, which is, you know, not a ton.
Sure.
But he likes to help, and I appreciate it. I like that he's out there and we're just spending time together, which is great. But one day I come home and Luke, in his, you know, just trying to be so helpful, was trying to do some weeding while he was out there. But of course, actually pulled up with the sunflowers. That was disappointing.
Like, oh, no. And that was, disappointing.
That was disappointing. I just came home and there's just like six stalks sitting on the sidewalk. And she's like, just don't look. I was like, oh no. So that's been, I was like, I replanted them. They all still look green. I don't know if they took. I don't know if they're going to take, but we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see on that front.
They're in our thoughts.
They're in our thoughts, the sunflowers. Yeah. But now you'd think that between weeds and children, that would be enough. But no, Ben, I have a new worst enemy.
Meteors.
I was actually... Not meteors.
Yeah, I mean, could you imagine, though, if imagine. It was meteors?
If it, you know what? If it was meteors, then I'd have a meteor, you know?
True.
If a you know what? You know what I'd be okay with? If a meteor hits the sunflower patch in front of my house, guess what? I just own a meteor now, and that's pretty cool too.
It's not the worst.
It's not the worst. Anyway, instead,
I interrupted.
My new worst enemy is the rabbits.
The rabbits.
The rabbits. Ben.
Oh dear.
Turns out.
Darned wildlife.
Yeah, darned wildlife. So it turns out that amongst the many things you can grow, there are certain things rabbits don't like. But I've recently learned that apparently, like, rabbits' number one most favorite food is, like, sunflowers.
Oh, no.
I know. Real problem.
You should set up a wildlife cam on your front door.
No.
You know?
Well, I mean.
I mean, I just think, maybe the real objective is to just not have them come back. But
yeah.
It would be, you know, kind of fun to just see the not meteor threats.
You know what? I got a bird feeder for out back, and it is fun watching the birds show up.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty good. There's it's attracted different birds that weren't in the backyard before, which is fun. Yeah, there's like this really bright yellow finch that comes up every now and then. That's our favorite. We named him Lemon. Yeah.
Man, I cannot wait for Addison to name things.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Luke is like total master namer. So we have Lemon, the yellow finch, and then we have like a bright red cardinal that will also come eat from the bird feeder. His name's Strawberry. So
those are both so cute.
I know. They're such good names for birds, especially wild birds that now I feel like I have a relationship with. It's like, oh wait, Luke, there's Lemon. You know, the guy come over, like, you know, it's very fun.
That is very fun.
Yeah. So anyway, I got rabbits, and this was my problem though, and this is what made me think of it, is that I was trying to determine, like, I came home one day and just like the stalks of the sunflower are still there, but all the leaves are gone. You know, it's like they ate the leaves. They didn't eat like the whole thing, just the leaves.
Mm, okay.
So
yeah,
like I'm trying to determine, you know, what do I do with my new sunflower problem of rabbits, like. Have I officially like already just lost the war because now the plants don't have any leaves?
So, like, yeah, this is like a weird one too, because I mean, for one, obviously the reason that leaves exist is because they're able to then, you know, go through the process of like photosynthesis and you know, take the energy from the sun.
Right.
And
yeah. That's what's
fuel.
Doing all the chlorophyll and stuff.
They're, exactly. Yeah. We paid attention in science class.
Leaves are basically the gatherer that, you know, if there were hunters and gatherers, they're just the gatherers of the plants.
They're Earth's solar panels.
Exactly. That's exactly, you know, they're out there getting the sunlight, turning it into food.
Exactly. It's all really great. But I also know, or at least I have seen quite a bit about, like, if you are growing vegetables, like in your vegetable garden, that like going through and breaking off some of the like smaller leaves towards the bottom can be very helpful, because then it helps the ones at the top grow.
Oh, right. Like now you don't have to supply nutrients to these loser leaves.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they're called. That's the, you know, a botanically accurate phrasing.
They all go to the jock leaves.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Plants is not like an, you know, plants is big leaves win.
Yeah. Oh,
this
man.
These are not equal opportunity creatures, you know.
It's a plant eat plant world out there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that being said, it's like, I think that there sometimes is some logic that can be applied to, like some pruning being good. The question is, like, and I don't know enough about like how a sunflower grows, but like if all of the leaves have been removed,
exactly,
yeah, what is left? What is the current health? Because there's also presumably roots down there that are doing something.
Yeah, you know? The roots got to be helping, right?
They got to do something.
They're doing something
more than nothing.
You think? Yeah.
So I'm not totally sure.
Yeah.
What to tell you here?
Well, here's the thing: is that I think that they're still okay because I've examined them since then, and some leaves have indeed already started growing back.
Hold on, I have a question. Did you use a magnifying glass when you examined them?
Because I did not
when you said you examined them, I imagine you got home from work, you pulled out your magnifying glass, you went down real close, And you looked through at it?
I did not. No, the leaves are big enough that I could see them with the naked eye, as it were.
Wow.
I know, but it took a few days to grow in. It's the first, I was like, what do I do? Should I just like dig up these plants and start over? You know, that would have been a real bummer.
That would have been a real bummer.
But what was ultimately really frustrating to me was the inability to Google an answer to this question.
Like, how do you prevent rabbits from eating sunflower seeds?
Not how do I prevent them. Are they okay even after the leaves are gone?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right. Because Google is more than happy to tell you all of the ways in which to stop rabbits from doing it. It's more than happy to tell you whether or not it was safe for the rabbits to have eaten it, as if I care.
Like, not a rabbit diner.
Look, yeah, this ain't a rabbit diner. I am not concerned about the rabbit's health here, all right?
Sure.
Because people are like, there's some rabbits ate my sunflowers. Are they going to be okay? And I'm like, I don't care if the rabbit's going to be okay. I want to know if my sunflowers are okay, if I need to restart. Okay? This is the real problem. Who's the victim here? Not the rabbits. They got a nice meal out of this situation.
Right.
As far as I could tell.
And now you don't have sunflowers.
Well, that's the thing. Do I have sunflowers? This is, I couldn't figure it out. I was like, the stalks are still there. Will the leaves grow back? And it was just an impossible to answer Google question, because there's 1,000 ways to prevent it from happening. There's nothing that tells you what to do after it's happened.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. So ultimately, I decided that what's going to happen is that the leaves are going to grow back. That was my determination based on the leaves actually growing back already.
You're going to will this to happen?
We've talked before about my ability to manifest things. And if I want those leaves back, they're coming back, okay?
Deal.
No. Deal. Deal. Deal with it. My ultimate solution was that I also just got some rabbit repellent, which I'm very skeptical about. But I'm presently trying it out, so we'll see if it works.
Interesting.
But if I come back and all those leaves are gone again, oh my gosh, I'm going to be so mad. All I want are just my nice, pretty big yellow flowers, all right? Doesn't seem like it's that much to ask for.
Are there any, I'd be curious if there's any accompanying plants that rabbits would be less interested in coming near. Like, I know, and this is not based on really anything other than, like, I know that, like, carrots and tomatoes grow well next to each other. So I'd almost be curious if there was anything that you would plant near something you want to succeed, basically just because, like, it otherwise is a natural repellent for the predator.
Yeah, you're all over the Google results, Ben, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm hitting the marks.
They have suggestions ranging from, plant things they're not interested in as like a barrier thing around there. There's build physical barriers. There are people who are more lenient towards the rabbits who are like, you should just plant the rabbits a patch of clover and maybe they'll go eat that instead. And I was like, absolutely not. All right.
Yeah, your animosity towards these unnamed rabbits.
Ben.
Maybe you should name one of them like Pepper.
Pepper?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. That's way too cute. They need much worse names.
Like Sauce?
Yeah. No, not Sauce. Sauce is a fun name too.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's a not fun name?
I don't know. I don't know. We need some sort of
bazooka.
Bazooka. Yeah. Yeah. So this is my, I don't know. It was making me actively mad that there were solutions that are like, here's other ways you could feed the rabbits so they won't eat your stuff. And I'm like, the rabbit's health is of no concern to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's been made clear.
Let's be clear.
Poor Bazooka.
Look, just not out poor there. Bazooka. He's digesting my sunflower leaves as we speak. The problem is, like, all the solutions are just like, go plant more stuff. I'm like, I don't want to plant more stuff. You know? Then there's going to be stuff besides sunflowers in my flower bed, and that's what I want.
I'm going to shift it to something that I tried. I concocted over the weekend myself, called banana water.
Banana water?
Banana water.
Is it exactly what it sounds like?
Almost exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, so you take a banana peel, you put it inside of a jar, you fill that jar with water, and then you just basically like wait a day, and then you have banana water that you can then pour on your flowering plants.
Actually, I am familiar with banana water, as it were.
Have you used banana water on
your plants? I did not use banana water, but I learned about banana water from the same source that I learned about other things I've done for my plants. One day, what did I make not too long ago? It involved
coffee.
It involved oatmeal and hot water and something else. And you basically just let it sit for an hour on your Oh, it was tea. It was open a tea bag, empty it into a jar, then put like a tablespoon of, or like a cup of oats in there, and then just boiling water, and just let it sit for an hour, and then it'll basically just turn into plant potion.
I love the care and attention that you're giving to your plants and the sheer animosity you have towards Bazooka. Like, it is the most hilarious, like, unexpected twist, I feel, like, where most people think, like, small furry creature. Adorable.
Yeah, I used to think that. It used to be a real treat to... This is how I know it's rabbits, too, is because I'll look out in my backyard, and sometimes I'll see the rabbits out there, and it was very exciting, because I could be like, Luke, look, rabbits! And he's just excited because, yeah, exact same thing. It was like, ooh, I get to show you this adorable thing, but now it turns out that the rabbits have turned on me.
They are
no longer just some spectacle of joy for my sons. They are enemies of the sunflowers.
They were once reliable,
now hated by everyone.
I don't think you're going to win many opinions with your hatred of bunny rabbits.
Well, Ben, you know what? Grow some sunflowers, then we'll see how you feel.
All right, that's fair. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Well, actually, I was gonna say maybe next year you could try like a raised bed or something. But my suspicion is that if you don't want to plant other plants, you also don't want to do a raised bed.
Look, I wouldn't mind having a raised bed. The raised bed would just not go well in the exact spot that my flower garden is, my flower bed.
I got you.
Then there'd just be this like random wall of stuff that. Also, if I know one thing about rabbits in particular, it's that they're good at jumping.
That's some good right? hopping, thought Little Nut Brown Hair.
Right?
Have you read that book?
I don't think so.
Guess How Much I Love You.
Oh, I have read that one.
Little Nut Brown Hair.
Yeah.
Big Nut Brown Hair.
This much, to the moon and back and stuff.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Nut Brown Hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like
mm-hmm.
we're at a good stopping point.
You think we're at a good stopping point?
I feel like we have now... opinioned all over rabbits for so long that if we don't exit the conversation soon,
yeah,
it's gonna get dark.
Well, here's the challenge for everyone. See if you can find a helpful Google result that tells you whether or not your sunflowers will survive post rabbit assault. Okay.
Okay. So this, remember earlier when I was saying we need to think of something to solve?
Okay.
This is
the thing.
We found it. Okay.
We found a thing.
So if your sunflower has been attacked and the leaves have been removed.
Yeah.
Can your sunflower still thrive?
Right. Exactly. That's what we need to know the answer to. Now, I'll go ahead and tell you that it appears the answer is yes. But that's not the confusion. The confusion is whether or not Google can deliver you that answer.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
So you use your magnifying glass to determine that this is, in fact, that all is okay.
So far, that's what it seems like.
I'm curious now also that it must mean, well, maybe they ate the leaves and then left because there were no leaves. Because I was like, I'm curious as to why they haven't continued to come back.
Well, that is the thing. There was like a single stalk that they apparently just were not interested in that had like some leaves still on it. But yeah, this is my new concern is that like I'm seeing some leaves grow back, but will the return of the leaves just reinvite the rabbits?
Mm, yeah.
We have to keep the repellent up.
Interesting question.
Yeah.
Interesting question. Mm-hmm. Anyway, guys, as ever, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. If you have any feedback for us, you can send that over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to support us over on Patreon, we have lots of really cool perks going on, including at our exclusive merch tier for Q2 of 2022. Bunch of twos in there.
Yeah.
We are officially able to announce the product that we will have for this quarter, which is going to be a black moleskin notebook with a gold stamp of the Popcorn Culture logo, and it will be personalized with your name
on it,
also in gold letters.
Yeah,
I know. I think that we got like the image of the prototypes sent to us the other day. Which one of my favorite things about this entire process, let me just tell you, is the fact that I get to say the word prototypes so much. it's like, yeah, I'm working on a prototype.
Yeah, working on the prototype. It's a thing.
I have like a schematic for like my, you know, like every like Kickstarter video ever has always got like, they'll have like a three-dimensional drawing or whatever.
Yeah.
I like to think that, you know, like I've got a three-dimensional drawing of a notebook and it's like, oh yeah, let me spin this around and like, you know, do all the things, whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it is a large format moleskin notebook, and it is lined, and again it will be pressed with the Popcorn Culture logo in gold foil on the front, black notebook also personalized with your name. Available now at patreon.com/popcornculture at the exclusive merch tier. If you sign up any time between now and June 30th, you will gain access to this particular piece of merch. So if you'd like to go and check that out, please do. Otherwise, until next time,
pop, pop.